Welcome to Playback. I'm Nate.
I'm Brandon.
We are music producers, and this is the show where we take turns picking albums to discuss. This week, Brandon has picked Static Age by The Misfits.
Yep.
Or is it just Misfits? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Everywhere that I see it, it just says Misfits.
Okay. I like a The band, though, so we're going with The today.
But in some places it says The.
Right, so we're going with The. Brandon, why...
How about you do The, I'll do Misfits.
I think we should get it straight.
Okay.
Brandon, why did you pick Static Age by The Misfits?
Well, I wanted to mix it up. I don't know. I wanted to go into punk land for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's a whole area of music that has so far been neglected by us in the few episodes that we've done of this show.
Yeah.
And then of the YouTube version of this show that we used to do. It's just really good. I feel like my reasons for picking it are like appropriately punk reasons. And like the reason why I picked it is like because it's good and fuck you is why I picked it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like just listen to it. It's fucking dope.
Yeah.
Don't need to explain it. It's just put it on. Let your soul be nourished by the cathartic anger and chaos and craziness. And it is simultaneously beautiful and like musically amazing in non-aggressive ways, presented in a very aggressive way.
See, it's funny. You're talking, you're referring to it in this like kind of aggro kind of way, which it is. But to me, listening to this album, there are moments where I'm like, this is such a beautiful song.
Yes.
Like, this is just a beautiful melody that I really enjoy.
Yes.
There are parts of it that just make me feel really nostalgic, even though me, have never had a Misfits phase. I never really got into the Misfits. I, growing up, kind of looked at them like, unfortunately, the Misfits are, unfortunately and fortunately, depending on how you look at it, they're like extremely influential in like so many ways that is just like it's like almost like it's mind-boggling when you really start thinking about it. They really like have their finger in like every single pie of like every hard rock band that came after them. It's funny because of all the bands for me to not get into, me not getting into the Misfits is so funny because they're just classic. Excellent punk rock, which I love. 70s punk, too, which I fucking really love. That's kind of my era of punk, is like the era which they came out of, they started in.
Yeah, so what are the punk bands that you do have a background with that you did get into?
The really like classic, like original ones, like Ramones, Sex Pistols, Clash. Those were my big three when I was a kid. And I just like, I was obsessed with all those bands. And then kind of like their offshoots, you know, like I got really into Public Image Limited. You know, obviously we've done a whole bunch of stuff on like Big Audio Dynamite for our own projects. We've like recorded covers of Big Audio Dynamite stuff. And like probably the Ramones, man. Like the Ramones were just like, I was obsessed with the Ramones. Thank you for you keep muting all your coughs. I think that's really nice touch.
I have good Zoom etiquette. Yeah. Remember everyone out there, the proper Zoom etiquette is when you need to cough.
Yeah.
Don't just go, just give a little quick mute and go.
He coughed.
Like that.
I was really into the Ramones. I'm trying to think like what were some of the other like punk bands, but you know what, for me it really really quickly dovetailed into like really quickly dovetailed into like grunge and stuff and like Nirvana and shit like that, and then from there it like that's where like my music taste really like took off and I kind of obsessed with that stuff more.
Your familiarity with punk, it sounds like, resembles kind of like my familiarity with hip-hop or something, which is like
basic.
I'm familiar with it's basic. I'm familiar with like with the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah,
and I haven't really dove deeper than that.
I got into like Fugazi a little bit. I got into fucking what's the Dead Kennedys a little bit. That's kind of okay, where good. It stopped for me. When okay. I found Dead Kennedys,
okay.
I kind of was like, okay, this is like, I don't really get this anymore.
Oh.
Like, it's cool, but I don't, it didn't like really resonate with me. Like, as soon as everything got to like hardcore, that's kind of where, you know what though? But at the same time, I did really love Black Flag, and they were very similar to the Misfits. But just,
and they predated them too.
Yeah. Yeah. But like I was saying though, it's funny, of all the bands for me not to get into, the one that is like a horror based punk band. Yes. Who specifically loves fucking Ed Wood movies. Like, fucking, we just did an Ed Wood inspired fucking music project, right?
Yeah, right. Inspired like, by Plan 9.
Yeah, inspired Plan by
Plan 9 from Outer Space, which yeah. is the name of...
Of one of our EPs we just made, yeah. But, so
And which is the name of their, of the Misfits record label that they used to release music on.
Right,
Plan
right.
Plan 9.
Yeah.
Inspired by the same stuff.
And, so, and yeah, they also, like, you know, they loved, like, old Hollywood, which I love. They love old Universal monster movies, which I love. It's like there's so much about them that I totally resonate with. Like, I'm just like, I totally get it, guys. Like, you guys are, like, my people. Like, I get it. But what prevented me from getting into them when I was younger, I think, was, ironically, the look. And it's not that I don't think they look cool, because I think they look fucking amazing. And their whole look is like a huge part of the band, right? But it was the fact that like...
Which we will get into.
It's the fact that all the bands that aped off their look, I fucking hated. I hated like My Chemical Romance. I hated fucking like... I did not really like AFI. I didn't like all these bands that like looked like them and that like were obsessed with them, you know, like rightfully so. I was like, fuck these bands. And then I kind of lumped the Misfits in with them. You know, they were like a Hot Topic band.
Well, right. Yeah. I think a lot of the commonality with those bands and the Misfits, in my opinion, is less musically, and it's more that they share fans.
Yeah.
The same people who liked those bands wore Misfits shirts when we were teenagers and
exactly.
And everything. And like you say, a Hot Topic band, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where would Hot Topic be? If you're not familiar with Hot Topic, is Hot Topic all around America or just like on the West Coast?
Yeah, it's just
it's a clothing store in America that completely caters to like teenagers who want to look gothy.
Yeah.
And like want to look like edgy. Scary and edgy. Yeah.
Studs and
yeah, they sell all the leather and metal jewelry. They sell that's where everybody got your hair dye and everything.
And I didn't like
band
that.
T-shirts. And half of all of Hot Topic's empire was built on
the Misfits.
The t-shirt that has the Misfits logo on the front of it.
Yeah,
that's 50% of their fucking GDP ever.
Yeah. The Crimson Ghost is what they call that guy.
Is he called? There's no red. There's no color. Why is he called Crimson Ghost?
I can tell you why. I'm surprised you don't know this. He's called Crimson Ghost because in the 50s there was a movie called Crimson Ghost, and that image.
Yeah.
It's a black and white movie, so you just have to fucking use your imagination. It's a red ghost, I guess. I don't know.
That is always the answer of anything related to the Misfits. Why is that titled that? It's always because, well, there was a movie. There was a horror movie from the 50s that
this
had the title this.
I love them. I know. This is what I would do.
So, I mean, now that you're saying this, I think that might have been like a subconscious reason for why I picked this is because I knew how up your alley this is of Nate's interests.
It really is. To the point where I feel dumb now. I'd feel dumb that's your goal.
That's my intention.
Your goal.
I can
for
just
like,
make sure that you feel dumb. My job is done.
It's secure is what it is. Your job is safe if you make me feel stupid constantly. Because you know what? If you feel like the smartest guy in your friend group, you need new friends. You know, this is like classic podcast advice. Now we're real, but once again, we're real podcasters. If you're the smartest guy in the room or in your friend group, you need smarter friends.
So since there's only two of us here, is this just a contest to see who can be the dumbest one? So as to not be the dumbest one?
What I'm really saying, I'm realizing, is you need smarter friends. And I'm talking about me, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which, that's too bad. I'm really talking myself out of a job.
Oh, you're saying that you're dumb. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm good with that. We can move on. So misfits are from New Jersey. They're a bunch of teenagers who got together in New Jersey, like right as punk rock was becoming a thing.
Mm-hmm. They were alongside contemporaries with like the Ramones. Like they were one of the early like CBGB bands too, even though they didn't really make it at CBGBs. They didn't.
But
they were more of a Max's Kansas City band, is what I read.
They are a band that that got together and started playing like when the punk thing was like about a year old.
Yeah.
You know? The thing that sets them apart is that they are inspired by horror movies and horror movie and campy.
Yes.
Not in a self-serious way, in an overtly on purpose, like tongue-in-cheek humorous way, inspired by, so everything that they do just has to do with zombies and skeletons and blood
and vampires and ridiculous
sci-fi stuff. So they have a shtick.
Which is in stark contrast to like the too hip to be fucking cool New York, Brooklyn punk scene. Like all exactly. those people were so fucking hip, right? At the time. Yes. Like they would be like it's funny to think back on now, but like, you know, like David Byrne and Talking Heads and Blondie and like all those bands, they probably would have come on. Like me now, like if they were our contemporaries, I probably would have been like, man, these guys are sniffing their own farts like too much for me. I think at the time I would have really gravitated towards a band like the Misfits, who were just like not taking everything so fucking serious, you know? Like,
yeah, right, exactly. Because in that scene of like who can be the coolest in the room,
yeah,
here come these guys who are, you know, from across the water in Jersey.
They read comic books and fucking
and they are on purpose putting on fucking clown makeup,
right?
And making every single one of their songs be some sort of. Like, why is this about a science
ghost.
Fiction B movie? Why why are they singing about that?
Yeah.
But what the music sounds like is very aggressive, trashy, thrashy, hardcore punk.
Yeah.
It is one of the like best things to put in the library. Of Congress for the rest of time, you know, to put in the time capsule to represent what punk music sounded like in its like first wave, you know.
Yeah, and I would say this like you say like hardcore, which like I would say yes and no to that, because they around this time I would kind of describe this album Static Age kind of more. It does kind of have more of like a classic punk bent,
yes,
rather than like what is it the Walk Among Us and like Earth AD, those are like actually kind of hardcore albums, like like hardcore, like the genre hardcore, like those are kind of more what you would describe as hardcore punk. Whereas this is like, I think what I liked so much about it is that it's got a classic punk vibe to it. There is a little bit of Ramones in here.
Completely. You know, yes.
It's fucking awesome.
No, you're right. The, when they play, The actual style of hardcore punk is more on Earth AD, Wolf's Blood, like another album that they recorded maybe like a year and a half after this.
No, it was like
So Static Age specifically, you're right, is an example of there's either none or almost no hardcore punk. Hardcore punk, by the way, like, you know, The easiest way for me to recognize it is it's the one where the drums are going
everything's like twice as fast and twice as loud and twice as aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah. When you hear it, you know it, and you're right. This album specifically has basically none of that, but the sound of it. To me, the thing that is most distinctive about Misfits, though, is it is the freaking songwriting. It's the melodies, the melodic quality that that their songs had really set them apart.
Yes.
And when I first got into punk and listening to all these different bands, I was probably in my like early to mid 20s. I listened to the Ramones, I listened to Dead Kennedys, Buzzcocks, and Misfits and a few other bands as well. And Misfits instantly stood out to me as like, okay, this guy, because Glenn Danzig, the singer, he wrote like all this music, literally all of it.
This guy like a major point of contention for these guys.
Yes, which we will get into.
Yeah.
But on this album and their other albums from when he was the singer, he has such a natural gift for melody.
Yeah, you know, he has.
It's.
So the way I would like describe the sound of this band is like kind of imagine classic 70s punk band, but you've got a guy who instead of like that screechy kind of what's the fuck face from Sex Pistols' name? Johnny Rotten.
Johnny Rotten.
Instead of kind of a screechy like top end high Johnny Rotten kind of punk voice, which I think you would kind of associate more with a lot of punk rock. He's got a very sultry, more baritone voice.
He's fucking singing.
He's a real singer.
Yes.
And they're real melodies. He's not just screaming over stuff.
Right.
You know, like, and I would compare he wears his influences on his sleeve, and he says right out, he says, my favorite singers, my biggest influences were Elvis, Roy Orbison, Jim Morrison, and I'm sure fucking probably Iggy Pop and you know, like guys who were, you know, he was smart. There's guys more in his register, the area where his voice kind of sat as a singer. Yeah. And I think it really lent itself well to the music, because I think it probably kind of forced them into a place where their music had to become a little more melodic rather than
screechy. Well, he wrote it that way. See, he wrote the music too.
That's
the thing. This was not a band that was like a collaborative. They didn't get together in the garage and come up with these songs, you know, where the guitarist or the bass player would be like, "Ooh, check out these chords. What can you sing over that?" No. So Glenn Danzig, he played keyboards.
Right. The first like single is like bass, drums, keyboard, Glenn singing.
Yeah.
it's really funny.
It's like a Rhodes electric piano.
Check
it out. Their first single that they ever released, it has the song Bullet, which is one of their most recognizable iconic songs that is on Static Age, but a version of it before there was ever a guitarist in the band. So it's drums, bass, and this electric piano, clean electric.
It's really
the guitar
funny.
Part being played on there. When you know the famous version of Bullet, and then you go back and listen to that, it's kind of comical. But that's what I mean, and it shows to me because what the music is doing behind his voice completely suits it. You know, there's like little moments of cool, like it's not actual counterpoint, but it like has the effect that counterpoint has.
All right.
So at times, which. You know, like, I don't know. To me, I can tell that these songs were, like, written by one mind, by one person, you know?
The band, there's a fun dichotomy in this band, and there's a fun kind of hierarchy of this band, which is there's Glenn Danzig, who wrote and sings beautifully, right? And he writes everything, and he kind of has this presence of, like the Dr. Frankenstein. And then he has a band of Frankensteins behind him, like, and they are kind of. I mean this with love.
Okay.
They are a bunch of lunkheads. They're a bunch of like I sent you this video, and it may be one of my favorite video, like, gear breakdown videos I've ever watched. Did you watch that? The gear breakdown?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
The gear breakdown video with Doyle, Von Frankenstein, I think is his full thing title. So he's the guitar player in the Misfits, and he's been the main, he wasn't the original guy, but he's like pretty much the guy that you associate with playing guitar with the Misfits for like most of their history, I would think.
And what he looks like when you think of what a member of the Misfits band looks like, it's him that you're thinking of. With the white face paint, the devil lock, their famous devil lock hair, the little pointy thing that comes down over your face, no shirt, gigantic muscles.
Huge, like comically ripped guy. Like, like Arnold Schwarzenegger playing a guitar, right? Like it's really funny to see. And there's this gear breakdown video he did like maybe 10 years ago or so. And he's getting interviewed by like a guitar magazine, and they're asking him about his guitars and all this stuff. And he is really knowledgeable about like electronics and all kinds of stuff. But when it comes to playing guitar, he's literally like, yeah, dude, like they showed me the notes on the two big strings. And the guy's like, the E string and A string? And he's like, yeah, those ones. And he's like, all I know how to do on guitar is play Misfits songs, but I don't know how to do anything else. I've never learned how to play any other thing on guitar. And that's like, that's what he does.
He said he sort of knew how to play the main riff from Smoke on the Water.
Which is a prerequisite for every guitar player. Everyone knows that one. But it's like, just imagine this super ripped dude, and he makes his own guitars too, which is cool. He like takes a plank of wood and like buzz saws it down into like a crazy like a devil shape.
Yeah, and in that interview, you can tell what he knows well is like wood carpentry. Shop and metal shop.
Yeah, 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 and like electronics.
Those
and
things
stuff.
He knows really well.
Yeah,
is carpentry. Yeah,
yeah. But actually guitar, playing guitar,
yeah, whatever.
He just like he. It's only downstrokes. He only plays as hard and as loud and as fast as he can, and he only knows Misfits songs. He only knows the Misfits songs that he knows.
Yes,
like I found that. To be so endearing and so charming and funny, like it just—it's like if you had Frankenstein as your guitar player. It's that's what it is. It's Frank. Literally, he goes by Victor von Frankenstein or whatever, and Doyle. It is Doyle. Yeah, whatever von Frankenstein. And it really is like Frankenstein is fucking playing guitar in the band. It's so funny and it's so awesome and perfect for their whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, and it's.
Yeah. Oh,
there. My freaking mic stopped working. It's one of those things where... So something that has always like kind of bothered me about the typical discourse, what people always say about punk bands and punk music is quintessentially that they can't play their instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, it was great. It was the music for people who can't play their instruments. And as I was educating myself with punk music... I kept on hearing bands like Buzzcocks, like Dead Kennedys, and even at in some moments the Ramones, and also Sex Pistols, where it's like there are riffs being played on this guitar that you can't play that unless you can actually play the guitar.
Right.
You know what I mean? There are drum fills that are being played. You can't do that unless you can actually play the drums.
I always challenge people like. When they're like, oh, the Ramones are like a really basic band, they're easy to play. I'm like, okay, play it like Johnny Ramone plays it though.
Right.
Which is exactly. only downstrokes, which is the only way you could get it to sound like that. Only downstrokes and like 10 times faster than I guarantee you can physically play. It is so, that shit is, it really, like they're not skilled in the way that fucking like Jeff Beck is skilled at guitar, but Jeff Beck could not play Ramone songs. Like I promise you.
It's just a different kind of skill.
Like,
it just always bothered me because to say that these guys can't play their instruments is just factually not true.
It's wrong. It's wrong. Yeah.
You know, I mean, even the Ramones' very first album, you know, has the song, I Want to Be Your Boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Hey, little girl, ding, ding, boom, daddy, boom, boom, bang, I want to be your boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a whole, like, arpeggiated guitar thing It's basically a guitar part that's like from an Elvis record, you know?
It's kind of, yeah, Roy Orbison-y or George Harrison-y even. Right. Like, it's cool. Yeah.
You have to be able to play guitar in order to play that. Yeah. Okay. So that is one of the things that I really liked about listening to Misfits, early Misfits. So this album, Static Age, this is the first LP, this is like the first recording that they ever did. Once they finally got a guitar player in the band, mm-hmm. you know, these guys are like 18, 19 years old at the time. This is the first thing that they ever recorded. And I really appreciated it because it actually is, to me, this actually does sound like, okay, these guys cannot play their instruments. These guys have one dude in the band who knows music, the singer, who wrote all this stuff, mm-hmm. who showed them what to play. Mm-hmm. Here, play it like this. Okay, now move up four things on the neck, then mm-hmm. go da da da, then go there. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then right here when I play this part, then you got to go here, then here, then here. Okay, okay. You know, the drums are like changing tempo at times, mm-hmm. right? The song Come Back, when the drummer gets the intro, right? Mm-hmm. The intro of the song is like, okay, we're going to start it with a drum beat. You play that for a few times and then the band will come in. Once the bass player comes in, the drummer totally changes the tempo and changes the feel because like, oh, fuck, I was playing the wrong thing the whole time. You know, like there are actual examples of these dudes are just dudes with instruments.
Yeah, yeah.
And when it's paired with really well-crafted songwriting, it's an amazing product.
It's very effective.
It's
yeah.
so fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's very effective. Yeah.
That amazing sound paired with the aesthetic that they have, yes. it is one of the all-time great like rock and roll products. Like is the only way I could describe it. Like it's up there with like Stones.
Yeah.
Like fucking, I don't even know. Like
the whole horror monster camp.
Kiss. It's really a lot sci-fi like Kiss. Thing.
It comes out of left field so much.
Yeah. It's punk rock. I mean, it's punk rock Kiss is what it really is. It's just they're way cooler than Kiss.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah. It probably was just, you know, because I mean, this is what, 1978 when they were mm-hmm. doing this. Like, this is like
it's the like heyday Kiss, of Kiss. If Kiss didn't suck, this is what this is.
And too, I think the other caveat to say about the whole narrative of punk musicians are guys who can't play their instruments type of thing is it must be said that the entire punk movement musically and philosophically came as a reaction to whatever was popular at the time. Mm-hmm. As every great artistic movement that, you know, you look back through the history of art and including music and other forms, when a movement hits, it's almost always as a direct reaction to whatever is super, super, super popular and prevalent at the time.
And they hate, they taught, I watched some interviews with Danzig and he was just like, we fucking hated Disco, Foreigner, Journey, The Who, Pink Floyd, all these bands that were like big on the radio. They were like, fuck this shit. Fuck this shit. And exactly. they were right. Like that, all that stuff was so stagnant at this point. Like it was so done to death. And like, it's kind of when all that stuff fell apart, you know?
Yeah. And so when you listen to those records, you listen to Journey Records, Foreigner, like Boston, like, mm-hmm. Steely Dan, like
Dad Rock,
the level of musicianship on display on those records, you guys, it is astounding.
Yeah.
You have to understand like the recording technology available during that time and the level of precision of performances that are on those records without the aid of a computer to assist you in making a rhythm or a pitch a little bit more precise without the benefit of having that. Those records are performed, like the end result of them is more precise than music that people make now with the assistance of computers.
Right. I think what Misfits...
It's fucking astounding. And so, yeah, these guys, they started bands like this either half or more than half of the reason was because of how much I hate these bands.
Right.
Because and fuck this music.
I think what the Misfits kind of were getting at with that critique is like, that's all really well and good and cool and yeah, it sounds good or whatever, but like you're missing the forest for the trees kind of thing. It's like, are you going to sit here and tell me that this Steely Dan record or whatever that is like this perfect little fucking contraption that you've built in the studio and is perfect in every single way and you've hired like $7 million worth of session people and engineers to like scientifically create the perfect sound ever. Are you saying this is the same rock and roll as Chuck Berry? Are you really going to sit here and say that to me as like an 18-year-old kid who just wants to like have fun and break shit and fucking like yeah. That's so like rock and roll used to be the barrier to entry used to be it used to be really easy, right? It used to be fucking three chords and have a good time and go dance and right? And now are you telling me the barrier to entry is fucking like David Gilmour? Right? Like I have to do that to play rock and roll now? Like I'm sorry. You know, yeah. And like in the, I love all those bands, but like in that sense, I've always loved that about punk rock. Is there just like they were like, fuck this shit, we're taking this back to its roots. And it's funny that they got so much pushback because this is closer in spirit and in style to what original rock and roll sounds like than anything that came out in the 70s. You know what I mean? Like, who are, you know, considered like the rock and roll bands, the classic rock bands, you know?
Yeah.
This is closer in spirit to like the original rock ethos. I think that's what they were getting at, you know, with I think all these bands is kind of what they were getting at.
There's definitely a middle ground because also happening in the 70s was like the hedonist stuff, like Zeppelin and the Stones and things, you know.
I think they would throw them in with...
There was a middle ground. That stuff is not punk. You listen to Static Age, that stuff is not this.
No.
And those guys were also not Yes and Rush.
That's true. But so. I think to someone like Glenn Danzig, they absolutely were. He could totally... I think he threw all of them in. He's just like, yeah. Dinosaurs... Fucking, you guys have had your day, and it was fucking 1968, okay?
Like, yeah, and I'm not saying, too, by the way, that I agree with that hatred and with that rejection of all those pristine bands. Not at all.
Me neither.
But I get it, though. And we will be doing albums that represent that moment in music on this show. I have several that are albums that I deeply, deeply love that epitomize that, like... super constructed music that Static Age is a direct reaction to.
I'm not picking a Steely Dan record for the next one, but I was going to. It would be so good to pick Steely Dan right after this and then also just love Steely Dan. Like, who knows? Maybe we will. I don't know. Listen to the bonus show.
Yes, bonus show after this where we talk about our what we're talking about next. But, yeah, I'm non-affiliated in that debate.
I get it. I totally get where they're coming from. And
it's good to get it because it really lets you kind of into the headspace of this music and where it's coming from, because that is a huge part of it. You know, like if you're listening to this and you don't get the you know, fuck you commercial rock and what's dominating the radio at the time, like if you don't get that little moment, like you're missing out on a huge part of what this like means and what it meant to the people who made it and to the people who enjoyed it, you know?
My first impression of this was, oh my God, what a tragedy that I did not hear this when I was 13. Like, oh my God, my life would probably be different, but also probably look kind of similar at the same time because I'm still, I got into all the same shit that they're really into just without ever knowing that that's what they were all about.
Yeah, you got like, obsessed with campy horror and campy sci-fi, horror and without, sci-fi without having misfits in your life.
Yeah. I was surprised by the fact that it wasn't hardcore, I guess. That it was, because I don't really like hardcore punk that much. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but it's just not my kind of thing. I like melodic punk. I like Ramones-style punk.
Yeah.
And so to listen to this album and to discover that that's what it is, it's, like, super melodic, like, fun, upbeat. You know, it's really thrashy and trashy, you know, but that really surprised me. And I instantly fell in love with this. I was like... Nice. And to the point where, like, it made me, like, Hybrid Moments especially. Like, it, like, something about that song, like,
is
pulls
that your
on
standout
my heart.
Song?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It is one of my favorite songs of all time, I think.
The same
it is
for me.
So good.
Like, same for me.
Dude,
Hybrid Moments is the top, that song is the top 10 best songs on this album.
Dude.
It might be in my top 10 favorite songs that anyone has ever written. It's so beautiful.
My experience listening to this album, I probably listened to this album at least 10 times, okay, since we decided to do this. Here's how it would go. I would get all the way through track 5 being like, God, this fucking rocks. I fucking love this album. And then Hybrid Moments would come on. Hybrid Moments would come on. And then it would go to We Are 138, which is a great song too, a really good song.
Yes, it is.
And then I would rewind and listen to Hybrid Moments again. And then I'd rewind and listen to Hybrid Moments again. I would typically listen to Hybrid Moments 3-4 times every time I'd listen to this album before I would finish it out.
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Oh my God. Something about that just like, it makes me feel really nostalgic for something that I never experienced. Like, it's just a really pretty, pretty song. But like, if you were to hear it, it's not like a ballad or something. It's like,
yeah. If you look at what the lyrics are,
yeah,
it's like, oh, okay. You know, it has words in it that you know, we can't say without getting demonetized.
I mean, we can't talk about Last Caress, and that's probably the second most famous song on this fucking record. And like, I don't know how we talk about that at this point.
So lyrically, you know, Glenn Danzig was someone who, you know, in a very true to the origins, the original ethos, the original philosophy of punk, he wants to make light of something that you can't make light of, that is offensive to talk about. Like, he wants to say what is uncomfortable.
In the same way that, like,
he wants to be sacrilegious on purpose and be a snotty little kid about it.
In the same way that, like, Sid Vicious would wear, like, a swastika armband. And it's like, okay, are they actually, do they think, like, Nazism is cool? No. It's because
it
would make people mad.
I wear this.
Yeah. And that's in the same sense, that's kind of how Last Caress is. It's like a song about, I've got something to say, that's for sure. He definitely has something to say.
Got something to say.
It's about, you know, assault. Well,
when you look at the lyrics, when I just look at the lyrics, and there's not that many lyrics, it's so overt that it isn't. It's almost comical. It's just a list. Let me just list a few things that are like very, what's the word? Like, not like arresting. I'm trying to pick a different word other than offensive.
I know.
that are shocking, you know,
like,
let me just pick a couple topics that would really shock somebody if I were to sing loud and clear into a microphone. And let me sing those.
It's also like poetic. It's like a very short like mission statement, the lyric in question. And it's like poetry, but it's like the most it is the most like offensive fucking like haiku like you could imagine. Yes. It's fucked up. It's horrible.
And then
like
the
if my
music
mom if my mother
so catchy.
Like my mom, I think, listens to this show. Mom, don't listen to that song. Don't listen to Last Crest. Don't listen to Last Crest. You will not like it.
But
and
then
yet,
you'd be depriving
so
someone of such an amazing song.
It's
a
really
good
pretty
song.
The melody is really pretty, and it's another one of those songs like Hybrid Moments that is kind of like, if you can pretend it's about something else, it really like, kind of pulls at you
in
a way.
No, that's a good point about Danzig's songs that he wrote. And Hybrid Moments is such a fascinating example of this, which is that literally just the tones of the music, the pitches of the music, like if you were to play it instrumentally on a piano, evoke an emotion that is so like human and pure, and like it really gets something happening in your brain, chemistry. And it's happening totally independent of what the lyrics are saying, what the quote unquote meaning or message is, you know?
Yeah.
Because typically in a lot of songs, what the lyrics are saying carries a huge part of the emotional weight of what makes you feel what you feel when you hear it.
Yeah.
But this is a song where it's the opposite. Like it is accomplishing all of this emotional payoff in spite of what the lyrics are saying.
Or is it
what
because,
the lyrics are saying is like counter?
Is it because of it? Is there some kind of like irony there that makes it is there an irony that is so imbued with the pure punk rock spirit and like youthful rebellion, abandon kind of thing that makes it beautiful, right? That it's so. Embodies like everything we love and cherish about punk rock in this time period, that the fact that it's so ugly and disgusting, that like perfectly embodies punk rock spirit, the punk rock spirit, and that maybe that's what we find so beautiful about it. Like, you know what I mean?
I'm just sitting here looking at the lyrics right now, and I'm actually realizing that my memory of it is not that accurate, because it really is only one line of lyrics, you know, when talking about what the creatures are going to do to your face.
That
is the horrendous thing in Hybrid Moments specifically. And actually, like a lot of these other lyrics, ooh, baby, when you cry, your face is momentary. You hide your looks behind these scars. And then like lines like give me a moment. They actually are like beautiful lyrics,
I'm kind of talking more about...
I take that back. Yeah, the other songs.
I'm talking more about Last Caress specifically.
Okay, like, yeah.
Because that gives me a similar feeling.
That's got nothing nice to say.
And yet, I do kind of feel a similar way to Hybrid Moments.
That's interesting.
And is it because it's so ugly? Hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Like there's something cathartic to it. And I think this may be something that you are responding to that makes you be a person who loves horror movies, you know, that like finds something emotionally valuable in watching content, which is essentially people being murdered and like people suffering and bad stuff happening.
Right.
You know?
I get much joy like out of that. It sounds bad.
But this is really interesting though, because I was listening to this interview of Jerry Only, who is the bass player in this band, Jerry Only, and he was talking about I don't know about you, but I don't really want to go into great detail about like the detailed history of the band and the politics between the band members and stuff. It is so complicated and so convoluted, and I think it would be kind of boring if we go through it blow by blow.
I think,
and we're not like the end all be all experts. The detailed history of this band and their internal politics is so well documented,
and it's
such better YouTube videos and everything about it to listen to.
If I had to boil it down, when I learned about the history of this band, I laughed out loud. It's so comical. They're one of those like Spinal Tappy kind of bands where
it's very Spinal Tap.
They had like 700 drummers who all like fucking like keeled over during this show or that show, and like they had like a billion lineup changes. They sued each other like 1,000 fucking times. Yeah. Like there's all these stupid lineup changes. It's just like they're one of those bands. The Misfits have existed in like a million different incarnations.
Yeah.
But the one that everybody loves is like this short little probably 6 year window where they had Danzig and Jerry Only and Frankenstein in the band.
Right.
In the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. Right. They broke up at some point, and basically they, for decades, they were apart, and it seems like mainly due to disagreements between Jerry Only and Glenn Danzig. So I was listening to an interview with Jerry Only talking. I'm like running the risk of losing my train of thought of why I brought this up. But he was talking about, okay, now I remember. He was talking about how he himself does not believe in anything evil at all. Mm-hmm. You know, he is a family man. He's practicing Catholic. He is a religious person. He believes in like traditional, you know, good stuff. Like he wants like kids and parents to get along and everyone to be happy.
He started a hardcore Christian rock band after Misfits called Christ the Conqueror.
I believe it.
Really stupid, really bad.
Jerry Only is an actual Catholic. Okay. Yeah. And what he was talking about in terms of, you know, and he's sitting there wearing the white makeup with the devil lock hair and everything. But he's like, dude, this is theater.
Yeah.
This is a horror movie.
Right.
This is entertainment. You know what I mean? It's like it's campy on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, do we look like real Satan to you? You know what I mean? Like their whole presentation is so intentionally, you know, there's a slice of humor in it.
Absolutely.
And it's meant to be enjoyed in the way that you enjoy something like that. So, you know, it makes sense to me. But that being said, it sounded like the main disagreement that he had with Glenn Danzig and why he didn't want to work with him so much anymore is because, in opposition to that, he believed that Glenn Danzig actually does want to represent evil ideas.
And really?
He does. Yes. And you listen to interviews with Danzig, and the main central thing that he harps on is like, it's like, dude, this is about like fuck rules.
Right.
You can't tell me what to do. Mm. You make a government, you make a church, you make a something. You try to tell me what to do. You try to tell people what to do. Fuck you. That's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. You know. And for Jerry, it's not about that. He's like, it's fun. Let's just have fun. But for Glenn Danzig, it like he actually does want to push antisocial behavior for real. And it sounds like that's their main kind of philosophical disagreement.
That and also, you know, obviously they fought over who wrote what songs, even though they, like, Jerry Only seems to admit that Danzig wrote everything, but they had legal issues over who has rights to use the name. Like, they should get some royalties.
Can we
for
legally
these songs.
Use this?
Which wound up being the case. Jerry Only got to do it, which was pretty stupid.
And by the way, now, at the time of recording for the past 9 years,
they're all back together.
Playing.
They're headlining fucking Coachella in like a couple months.
Man, we should go.
I know.
But then we would have to be at Coachella. Maybe we shouldn't go.
Would suck ass because that festival's not what it used to be.
Yeah. I don't want to go actually.
Yeah. We've taken a really long route around me asking the follow up question, which is, so you're a Misfits guy. You've always been a Misfits guy, I take it. What were your impressions listening to it this time after, I assume, maybe a long time?
Well, not really. I do listen to this album periodically still. And so, like, it to me, honestly, like, it was to the point where I've heard it so many times that I don't really have any fresh impressions or takes left. Mm-hmm. At least this time through, you know, maybe next year when I boot it up again, I'll feel something. But I think the only difference for me now was that I was listening to it and doing a deeper dive into the Misfits and the context of it, just because, you know, we're going to be doing a podcast episode about it. So right. I need to learn more about it. Mm-hmm. And so I did. So I think that's the main difference is like I never looked up interviews about these guys. I never listened to them talk. Mm-hmm. I never even heard their speaking voices. I I didn't have as strong of an understanding of like where this recording of this album fits in their in the context of their history and everything. So, CI recording. So I dove into this a little bit. It appears to be primarily a jazz recording studio.
That is so awesome! Oh my god!
So the dude who engineered this and produced this was a dude. I mean, he still is a dude. Dave Achilles.
Okay.
Achilles. Dave Achilles. Dave Achilles. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Okay.
But it appears that you know, this is just from my own freaking Googling and using of a few fucking websites that are available to anybody. But it seems like he was a staff engineer there. But and Nate, you will know about this because Nate worked for a long time as an assistant engineer in a big time recording studio here in LA.
Pump the brakes. I was not an assistant engineer. I was like an executive.
Oh, you were an engineer's assistant.
Yes, I was like an executive helper.
Okay.
I touched the
Frank Sinatra microphone.
A million times. Yeah, I got to work at I got to work at Capitol Studios for a long time, and I was an executive coffee go-getter and mic setter upper. That was my actual title on my paycheck.
So I noticed that Dave Achilles, Dave, we'll just call him Dave. Dave's credits at CI Recording, at this recording studio, prior to the recording Static Age, they're all like assistant credits.
Okay.
Okay. And they're all jazz records of like, you know, fairly well-known and successful jazz artists. And they're all like mixed and recorded by other engineers. And then there's Dave as a assistant.
He was probably a tape op or something.
Right. So I'm thinking... What I'm deducing.
I know what you're going to say. I think of the same thing. The head engineer got this across his desk, maybe heard the band or caught wind of what their deal was and was like, Dave, you can take this.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, I'm not doing this shit.
Exactly. What we normally get here in this recording studio is jazz artists with an actual budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's our bread and butter, and that's what we do. Here comes this band that got they're not even paying with money.
No.
They got a favor. They're bartering with the label.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't even money involved, right? Because what Misfits paid for the studio time was the rights to a name.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, that's when he changed the name to Plan 9 Records, because he couldn't use the name Blank Records anymore, because he fucking... He sold it to them, not for money, but for studio time.
Mm-hmm.
So from the studio's perspective, what are we going to get from this? Nothing. No money. This is a favor from one of the labels for these guys who don't play jazz. They don't play what we do. Punk rock is about a year old at this point.
Right.
Maybe two years.
Frowned upon by like... normal, more mainstream music circles. Like they are fucking the riffraff, which they were.
So you got your old timer engineers who are the main staff engineers at this recording studio recording jazz. So if they're old timers in 1978, that means that these dudes were born like during World War I or born in the 20s. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's who these folks are. Right. They see this work order coming across and they're like, yeah, fuck that. Assistant, you go ahead and handle this day. I'm not even going to come in today.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so here is now Dave being the main a technical person engineering and producing this entire recording with a real recording studio. Mm-hmm. And in comparison to, you know, Ramones recordings. Okay, see, here's the thing. Punk rock is known for being, for sounding shitty, for sounding DIY, for not being pristine and polished like so much other music at the time, okay? If you compare the way that this sounds and then hop over to something that Sex Pistols recorded before this, like Ramones, Buzzcocks, their recording sounds so polished in comparison to this.
Yes. Wait, who? Do you think the Ramones sound more polished than this?
Yes.
I guess so, yeah. They do. It does.
So they, and I think
I mean,
that
that's like
is,
a very, like, that is like minute degrees of more, yeah. But like, yeah, I would say I would agree.
Yeah, like the, on those,
I guess, yeah, think of Blitzkrieg Bop. It's like, it's awesome. It's a great,
yeah, it is. Oh, there's a leaf blower outside my house. The gardener's using the leaf blower right now. Sorry, everybody. There's because there was actual funding behind those bands. Okay, mm-hmm. The Ramones and the Sex Pistols both.
I would say the Sex Pistols in particular, like the Bollocks, like sounds fucking awesome.
It is a real record that was recorded in a real studio because they had real funding. Okay, these were not just a group of kids who knew each other and who were related to each other, who like just had their little DIY project band that they wanted to do just for their own reasons. And they were just having a go at it and representing themselves and just finding their way through the world and recording wherever they could and everything. Those bands were put together. They had representation. People paid for them to record in real recording studios and release their shit on real records. Okay. And it shows. The Misfits was that group of kids from the garage. This actually was just some kids who knew each other. Doyle and Jerry are brothers.
Right. And Doyle
everybody
was like 15.
Involved in this. All these dudes like have Italian last names, you know. They're just like Italian American dudes from Jersey. Mm-hmm. And even when they go to a real recording studio, the way that they get themselves in there is so haphazard. The people involved, you know, they got the assistant recording them.
Yeah.
Everything involved is so, like, slapped together. You know, it has this authenticity. It has this badassness to it because the musical ideas and, like, the heart and the commitment that these kids had comes through that lens, and it sounds so cool. Like, it's this, to me, actually does sound like what a lot of other punk claims to be.
Yeah. To me, my take on that is that it's kind of, there's like a, it's kind of odd in one sense that it does sound kind of trashy and thrashy, right? But there are like aspects of it that do sound really good. Like I would say like the bass in particular sounds like really distorted and like overdriven. And it's like a classic punk rock. Yeah. It's a fucking P bass, like probably direct into a board or something and it's like distorted, but it sounds fucking awesome. It's like what you think of when you think of like a punk rock bass. But then you like listen to like Danzig's vocals and it's like, wow, it sounds like really good. There's not like drum overhead bleed. Like there's not like cymbals crashing into his microphone or something. Maybe there is, I don't know, but it doesn't really come across that way. So it's funny. Like I agree and I get what you're saying because it is kind of a thrashy sounding record, but it's not as shitty sounding as I was expecting.
Okay.
Like it sounds better. And like, also maybe this is just a matter of like taste. Like I like the sound of like, you know, punk records that are kind of recorded in like this minimalist way. Like I think it sounds cool.
Too.
Like I don't know. Maybe my brain is so wired that sometimes I can mistake sounding cool for sounding like well done.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I would say that there are punk records that sound much more harsh than this at the same time. I guess I only say that not to like scare anyone off, like that this is going to sound like a garage demo or something, because it's not that. It's, you can hear that it's in a real studio. It's just that I think the way this real studio approached recording this project was like the most bare bones fucking way they possibly could. They were like, just get these fucking guys out of here.
Exactly.
Like, as fast as possible.
I think the aspect of the way that this album was produced that gives that kind of lo-fi impression is not actually the studio and the technology with which it was recorded, because remember, it's the same studio that makes all these jazz records. Mm-hmm. It's like the quickness that it was made with.
Yeah.
It sounds like, I don't know this, but I'm guessing just from what it sounds like they showed up, they set up their drums, they put the amps down, they went, okay, this song, boom. Okay, let's play this song, boom. And they did each one like two or three times.
That's what it sounds like.
And then they mixed all 17 songs in like...
on the fly.
In like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Just straight to tape. The dial it up there, boom.
Yep.
Done.
Yeah.
There's your record.
What it sounds like is the Misfits cared a lot. The studio cared very little.
There you go. Yes.
Like...
yeah, because the person in charge that they put is like one of the least... the seniority people on staff.
Yeah. But that's also like a classic, this whole scenario is like a classic way you set up your assistant engineer to level up and become an engineer. Right. It's like you throw them little projects like this.
This is
and
a normal also, thing. The only thing that's weird about it is that those little projects, which these are happening all around the world in all recording studios all the time for decades. It's just normally those little projects that you throw them don't end up becoming classic venerated records that like, are like, you know.
Like those projects don't launch 1,000 other music movements and bands. Like those projects typically don't spawn Metallica afterwards. You know, like, yeah. And also, I mean, we should point out too that like, okay, they were given 30 hours of studio. 30 hours. Like, oh my God, that's a lot of time, right? No, it's not.
No, 30 hours.
No, it's not. 30 hours.
Nothing.
Dude.
30 hours gets you this. In a good studio. You get this if you have 30 hours.
Yeah, like 30 hours, it's nothing. And the way they did it, I read, was that they had rehearsed the shit out of all the songs. And yeah, it's like what you said. Yeah. I think they just plowed through every song as fast as they could. And that's what you get.
And you mentioning how they rehearsed the shit out of it before they went, I think that leads me to another thing that I really took away from this dive into the album for me, which is that like it would dishonor them to. This is another thing that I feel that a lot of people do with punk musicians is that they interpret the DIY-ness of how the music comes across. They interpret that to mean that the musicians don't care about their music and about their art and about their craft and about what they're doing. And at least in the case of the Misfits, that wouldn't do them justice, I think.
I would say this is like all they care about.
Yeah. Like their artistry, what this product is that they're giving to people, they take it so seriously and they really care about it.
For example... yeah. They rehearsed the shit out of this thing. They played tons of shows. They booked all their own shows. They had their own fan club that they ran called Fiend Club, I think is what it was called, that they still have and still run. I don't know if they still do it at this point, but it's they started one of those like super quintessential punk fan clubs where they would ship out merch and records or whatever. They paid and got their own records pressed. They fucking screen printed their own t-shirts.
That's what I was going to say.
They were so DIY. They lived and breathed and shit and ate Misfits 24/7 is the impression I get
from these. Misfits?
You don't think that they would? You think that's an inappropriate way to describe them?
Hopefully in the opposite order from that. I hope.
Okay, yeah. But all I'm saying is that like their day started and ended with like, yes. I'm a misfit, you know. Like
exactly.
You know, it's like exactly. It's all in. And I'm telling you, like to do all that, that is so much work.
Yeah,
it's hard to even like explain. We do like a quarter of that for our band, and it's like we fucking do this shit all the time. Yes, like we're like constantly working on stuff, and like we do like less than half of like the kind of things that we don't play shows. We don't make our own merch. Like we don't fucking we don't have a fanzine. Like you know, so like I can't even imagine how much like blood, sweat, and tears went into just like being in this band all the time. Yeah. It's probably
inspiring.
Yeah, it's inspiring.
And also too, just how much they cared about like, you know, what the lyrics were and like what they're playing.
Yeah.
You know, they take it very seriously. And you can see that a lot too in the way that they kind of curated the release of their recordings. Okay. Like I remember for the longest time, I think for a really long time, there was no Misfits on Spotify. I might be wrong about that because I remember I had Spotify for a long time and I loved Misfits and it was never on there. And then all of a sudden one day it appeared and I was like, oh, sweet.
Well, this is a whole good topic in itself, which is just that like Static Age, like this, you couldn't even get this until 1996. It's their first album that they recorded.
Yes.
But their band was so chaotic and like they couldn't put this out for whatever reason. And then by the time
I don't know.
And then they broke up and it wasn't until the 90s that this actually came out. And
13 years after the band broke up, they released their first album.
Was it 13? I think it's longer than that because this was recorded in 78 and that came out in 96.
Well, so I'm just saying after they like broke 18. Up in 83. Oh, okay, yeah. They broke up in 83.
Right. Yeah. You're right.
And their second one too. The early history of this band is so chaotic.
Yeah.
Like it is just a story of losing drummers, losing guitarists, trying to go on tour and it falling apart, trying to release a record and it falling apart.
Trying to go on tour and just getting thrown in jail.
Getting arrested in foreign countries.
I heard two stories that were so good that like they tried to go on tour with The Damned, who are also another kind of horror adjacent punk band who I've actually got to see The Damned. They opened for Blondie when I saw them and they're really good. So they tried to do a UK tour with The Damned and they got thrown in jail in London. And so they wrote a song called London Dungeon. I don't remember like the specifics for why, but I think they played two shows on that tour, got thrown in jail in another country. And then like the tour was over.
and they tried to get another thing going, but the drummer decided that he just wanted to do heroin instead and just disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and then the other story I heard was that they tried to play, they were on tour and they were in New Orleans, and they looked up the grave of this, like, voodoo, like, woman kind of thing, kind of person. I'm very fuzzy on, like, who she was, but she was, like, you know, she died a long time before, but she was, like, really into voodoo, and they went to the graveyard, and they actually got arrested and thrown in jail for grave robbing. Which is so awesome. It's so awesome that like the Misfits got thrown in jail for grave robbing. Like, of course they did. Like, that's so fucking awesome.
So basically they held all these recordings their whole history. There's a lot of examples of them kind of being very precious about how and when people get to hear their recordings.
Mm.
I remember when I was younger, to buy these CDs, it was like $40 or something, you know, like you could only get them in certain collections.
There was like a box set that came out in the 90s that had like mostly everything.
Yeah.
But you're right, because prior to that, stuff was
hard to get. And there was limited where you could get it and all kinds of stuff like that.
It's because prior to them getting back together in the 90s, which I put a massive asterisk next to that. Prior to them getting back together in the 90s and they did release all their stuff in like a box set on CD and all that stuff. all the songs on Static Age, they were all, a lot of them, I think, were singles and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was like I said, they pressed their own shit. They went and paid for their own pressings. So we're talking like there's 500 copies, and that might be the only way you could hear it, right?
Yeah.
So to put that in context now, like an original Misfits single from the 70s, one of the ones they pressed on like Plan 9 Records or something, they're like $2,000, $3,000 for a piece of vinyl. Because there's only a few hundred of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, this was stuff that probably was just passed around for a long time between fans and, like, shared and, you know, bootlegged.
And it's really interesting to me, and to me it's a sign of how much they cared about their art, because if they were super punk rock about it and like, you know, fuck everything, even fuck my music, like, I don't even care, you listen to it, who cares? They would have just been slinging it around, you know, like, oh, you want to hear it? Like, as soon as, like being able to download and file share music, they would have, you know, like, yeah, go for it. Like participated in that, but they weren't. They were very protective about their, and choosy about their recordings, when and how they are available to people. Like, it's really interesting, you know, they're kind of like curators, very sort of hoity-toity about their own art, you know?
And I think it that went a long way in kind of mythologizing them and building up the myth of the Misfits. And it's like you had to go see them live if you could, even though for a long time you could. Or you had to go see Danzig or Samhain or whatever that band was. Like, you had to go see these guys if you wanted to kind of experience a lot of this stuff. Or it's just like you kind of had to be there. You know, and it's like it's crazy to me. It's crazy that it's crazy that they didn't just fall into obscurity. And I think a lot of that is because like they started getting covered, like Metallica started covering Misfit songs. And when they came out, you know, like Green Guns N' Roses,
that's one of my, Green Hell is one of my favorite Misfit songs.
Yeah. Like they,
it's not on Static Age, but.
They were,
Metallica covered it.
Their influence on way bigger bands is so massive. Like, it's crazy. Like, to me, like, when I first listened to this, I was like, oh my God, I hear 1,000 records in Static Age. I hear 1,000 bands in Static Age. Like, it's like, to the point
Metallica,
where...
Like who
Metallica,
who
Guns N' Roses. And these are just bands that covered them. I'm forgetting some of the other ones now, but like...
Oh, okay.
Like, it's like... And all those bands we talked about at the beginning, like,
but
I saw...
You can hear the influence.
Yeah, like, I saw a video of, like, Blink-182 covering Hybrid Moments, which was actually pretty good, and I'm not a Blink-182 guy. Totally hear fucking, like, Green Day.
Good song, because they're just playing a good song.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally hear, like, Green Day in this. It's just, like, pretty much... Every punk band who was worth their salt, or hard rock band post Misfits, I hear Misfits in them now. Like, it's like I can't pull the Misfits out of all these bands now.
Yeah,
like, it's
right.
So clear to me. Like, Queens of the Stone Age, fucking Nirvana.
Oh, that's a big one.
Fucking even like Pearl Jam, like a band you would way more associate with maybe loving like The Who. It's like, no, dude, they loved punk rock too. And it's like, even bands you wouldn't think of. It's like, and it's just like, to me, also like, just speaking on like their influence, it's like, you see like people wearing, the people that wear like the Misfits shirts. Like, I saw a picture of Michael J. Fox wearing a Misfits shirt, and I'm like, I'm always kind of like, to me, I always like assumed like that people that wore their merch, and this is such like an asshole take of me, but like, this is kind of what I thought. I'm one of those guys where I'm just like, I don't ever want to be the like, oh, you're wearing their shirt, name three of their songs. Like, I hate guys like that, but I kind of always assumed that's kind of what this was like,
that
do you
people
really...
who wore Misfits shirts don't know the Misfits music.
Yeah. Like, do you really like this band or do you just like the t-shirt? You know what I mean? Because I saw like Kylie Jenner wearing a fucking Misfits shirt. I saw a fucking, it's just like the people I see wearing these. I'm like, do you really like this? But like,
well,
after listening to this and how good the songs are, I'm kind of like, maybe they are just as popular as they seem, and I just never got it. Maybe I'm the one who just didn't get it. I just didn't get it, you know?
It could be. It could be, because, yeah, I mean, this is a band, like a lot of punk, a lot of the most famous punk bands, like, to the wider world, have a couple.
Yeah.
Or maybe even one song that everybody knows. Even the Ramones, like, how many Ramones songs is it that, like, you know, just the wider public knows? It's really only like two or three or four songs.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
You know, Blitzkrieg Bop and...
Yeah, you're right. There's none other one. There's no other Ramones song as big as Blitzkrieg Bop. That's like the biggest song ever.
But Misfits... Well, I wouldn't say... I don't think Misfits have any songs that are as big as Blitzkrieg Bop or that are like ones that truly, you know... civilians actually know the title of and everything. Mm-hmm. But if you are into it, there's kind of like a top crust of like 10 songs that are, so, you know, there's like Last Caress, Hybrid Moments, We Are 138, Bullet, She, Where Eagles Dare, you know, going into songs that are on other albums, Hollywood Babylon. Misfits are not like a one or two or three hit wonder.
Yeah.
They kept delivering.
Right. They have a really good, oeuvre. What am I trying to say?
Oeuvre.
Output. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Yeah. But yeah, like they're good songs. A good body of work. Their good songs are really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Their song engine like really worked. You know, it had staying power. That wherever it is that their music came from, whatever place their music was coming from, could stand up to, you know, being asked to produce more. Give us more of that. Give us more of that. Give us more of that. Because also too, if you like Static Age. So have you heard their album Walk Among Us?
That's one of the Danzig era ones, right?
Yes.
Yes.
That's the first full length album that actually got released.
I did. I did listen to that and Earth AD. I liked Walk Among Us a lot. I liked Earth AD a little less. It was, that one's more like kind of hardcore.
And yeah. Earth AD is the entire thing is hardcore the entire time.
It's loved Walk Among Us though. I thought that was fantastic. Yeah.
So if you like Static Age, Walk Among Us is like more of what you like. It's more of the same, you know, which is really good news. Not a lot of bands have that, you know, a lot of bands have like, you know, one or two, like for example, we were talking about like Graceland a couple episodes ago. And to me, that's an example of, and these are really common when I'm listening to an artist and I really key in on one of their albums in particular, and I just love it. And I'm just left with like, man, I wish that more of their work was just like this.
Right.
You know, I wish that that this album had like a sister album.
Yeah.
Or a couple. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the albums don't have that. But that original era of the Misfits, to me, it does. Like, you go listen to some other of their releases, and it is. It's more of what you like. So that is like an interpolation of something. I don't know if interpolation is like the real word for it, but like that's a classic rock and roll thing that you would normally be doing with full chords, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's brought down to not all of the notes in the chord, but just the root aspect of it, and then he sings over that, and that's all the music that you get. And so the effect that it has is it like makes your brain fill in the gaps, Mm-hmm. It makes your brain imagine the rest of the notes and imagine the rest of the accompaniment. And the space is just filled in just by the timbre of the music, just how distorted and aggressively it's played. You know, the hard picking of the bass. Bing, 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 bing. So like it substitutes musical information with like attitude information.
Yeah.
With like emotional information instead.
Mm-hmm.
So it musically ends up getting refined to its bare bones. But this is an example of that like working so freaking well, I think.
Yeah. And it still comes across the emotionality in like a full A minor chord or a full minor chord is still there because of, you know, his melodies or whatever,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Okay, so best example of that, your favorite song, my favorite song, Hybrid Moments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so normally these are the full chords. This is normally what you would be getting.
Is it a 7 chord right there? Really?
Well,
it's not another minor chord?
So,
or what is that?
You're talking about
the second to last chord. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
what is that?
So this is entirely my point.
Is that like a major 7 or something? What is that?
Yes, it is. Check out the ear on Nate. That is a major 7 chord. Good job. But here's exactly my point, is the way that they perform it, it's neither. It's not major.
Right.
It's not minor. It's not 7. It's not anything. Because
but it's implied by the melody,
they've taken
though.
Away so many of the notes that what they're doing is... So everything that makes these first chords major and then minor is gone. They're doing...
But all the stuff missing from the chords themselves are then implied, and it's like it's filled in by the melody.
By the melody, exactly.
Right. And so your brain still makes those emotional connections implied by those chords because of
what Danzig is singing.
Yeah.
Right? He's singing the note that
exactly. He's
that
singing
makes it, that makes
a
it
major,
a major
7 chord. Yeah. Yep.
Oh my God. That whole moment right there. So that D note, he's singing a D note that holds over 3 different chords. The G, so the D note that he's singing is the 5th of that chord. Then change to E flat, major 7. The D note that he's still holding is the major 7. Mm-hmm. And then resolve on a D chord, where mm-hmm. the D note that he's singing is the resolving tonic note of that.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, I love that example.
This whole thing is one of the things that grabbed me about the way that their music sounds originally. It's what makes me keep listening to it. It's sort of like a palate cleanser to listening for me to while listening to a lot of other really like harmonically complex music, is because how effective they make their music by removing everything except for only like the 2 barebone necessary components
mm-hmm.
to make this, to get the harmonic information across. It's just the accompaniment of a single note and then the melody that the main voice is singing, and that's it.
Right.
The rest of it is filled in by your brain.
Yeah. I wonder, do you think...
It's actually a really musically sophisticated thing. Really?
It is, yeah. No, yeah. It's a wonderful chord progression. Yeah. I kind of wonder, like, did Danzig, I think I'm answering my own question. No is probably the answer. Did Danzig know these chords? He was a piano player, right? I mean, he took clarinet lessons and piano lessons as a kid. Maybe he knew some actual chords.
I think he did know what he was doing.
Like, did he know the theory? And was it one of those things where he was like Doyle von Frankenstein? This is a major... Okay, never mind. Here's the two notes you need to do.
Exactly. That's what I believe. I believe that it is the perfect marriage of intending to do it and necessity. And yes. We don't even have another option.
Right.
Because all that we have is Jerry's 15-year-old brother, Doyle.
Right.
Who is holding a guitar... He's been playing guitar for 8 months.
Yeah.
And, I think it's just like the spheres align, you know, just one of those like perfect little moments in history where that's the end result of it.
No, that's wonderful.
And also too, real quick, the last thing that I wanted to ask you, what are some of your favorite songs and any songs on this album, if any, that you like don't really vibe with, that you don't really like?
I'm just looking at the track list right now. The ones I know that I loved.
Yeah, what are your favorite ones?
Static Age, I loved.
Static.
TV Casualty, I thought was really cool. I love that they end it with like an actual sample of a television. It was fucking awesome. And it's like some like I Love Lucy playing in the background or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it literally I Love Lucy?
It literally is.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Last Caress, obviously Last Caress is probably one of the most famous songs on this. Return of the Fly, love it. Fucking The Fly. It's if anybody's familiar with the David Cronenberg Fly, it's actually a remake. There's a movie called Return of the Fly, which is like one of the many sequels, crappy sequels of The Fly they made. So I love that. Hybrid Moments, loved. We Are 138, love. I think in Misfits circles, that's like another one that's like as famous as Last Caress or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of like the national anthem of Misfits, I think.
Right. Yeah. I would assume maybe for more casual listeners, maybe if they're not familiar with that one, don't sleep on We Are 138. That song fucking rips. Teenagers from Mars is really good. I don't remember Comeback. The only one I'm seeing that I don't remember loving Angel Fuck that much, although I love the title. I hate to criticize it for being a little too goofy, but maybe, I don't know.
That is, in my opinion, that has got some of the best melody stuff. Danzig's main thing is he's a melody man.
Yeah,
that's some of his most melodies.
Yeah, right, it's true. It is good. I probably just need to maybe revisit that one. Hollywood Babylon, I love because I want to read the Kenneth Anger book, Hollywood Babylon. That's probably one of the next books I'm going to read. If you're not familiar with Hollywood Babylon, it's by this guy, Kenneth Anger, who it's basically like all the lurid rumors, tales, myths of Hollywood written by in the 60s about kind of the classic Hollywood people. How did Marilyn Monroe die? Like, was it fucking drugs? Was it a conspiracy?
Was she murdered behind the scenes?
It's all really delicious, ooey gooey kind of Hollywood conspiracy stuff, which I love. Attitude, Bullet's great. Bullet's another current. I mean, the whole thing fucking rips, dude. It's like it's a fucking perfect record, really, I think, like top to bottom. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
What about you? Did you have any top favorite songs?
Yeah, well, Hybrid Moments is one of my favorite songs by anybody.
Same.
But yeah, the same ones that you pointed out. To me, like the cream of the crop are like Some Kind of Hate, Last Caress, Hybrid Moments, Teenagers from Mars, Attitude, Bullet.
Yeah.
She and In the Doorway.
It's like a two-thirds of the album is like essential classic listening.
Yeah. So to me, there's really just like a couple that I don't really resonate with. So Come Back, that's the one that starts with the drum intro.
You know, that's the one I can't even like remember it off the top of my head.
Yeah.
To be honest.
It's 5 minutes long for
some reason. Isn't it?
You know what that song reminds me of? So you remember back when we were doing this playback show on the YouTubes? Well, unless actually, I guess we do release this on YouTube. It's just
a different format now.
But yeah, earlier on the channel, yeah, the first format, I guess, is what I should say. But we talked about Physical Graffiti by Led mm-hmm. Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we got into an altercation about, mm-hmm. me and you, was about the song In My Time of Dying.
Which you said was too long.
Yeah, and I was like, why do you need to take this thing that has like a couple musical ideas and do it six times?
Right.
And make the song be three times as long as the rest of the songs. Why?
Because it's cool.
That's how I feel about this song, Comeback.
Okay.
It's like, you know, every other song in the album is 2 minutes long or a minute mm-hmm. and a half, and it's got a couple great musical ideas that they do a couple times and the song is over. Okay.
You know, it's funny too. It's funny too. It's 5 minutes long and yet it did not stick with me at all when I can like, right. I remember like almost all the other ones off the top of my head.
Because just like the other songs, it's got one or two little musical moments. Okay. That's fine. But why do you need to do it eight times?
Right. Right.
Why this song?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, why not Hybrid Moments?
Exactly. Play the Hybrid Moments for 5 minutes.
The one that I listen to for 10 minutes at a time when I listen to it. Like, I will just repeat it over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's funny. Because, yeah, that's probably the single worst song on the album, I guess. But,
so yeah. The other one, there's two other ones for me that don't particularly resonate for me. One is Theme for a Jackal.
Okay, I don't really remember that one.
That's
either.
The one with like that like early rock and roll piano. Thing,
so like ding, okay,
ding, 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 ding.
In the track listing, does this album end at Bullet? Because Theme for Jackal, She, Spinal Remains, and In the Doorway, those all have the caveat CI Recording 1978 next to them on Spotify Tidal where I'm listening to it. So does like are those bonus tracks?
I don't know the reason.
Is that part of the whole, is it a 17-minute or 17-song album, or is it a 13-song album?
As far as I know, it's a 17-song album.
Okay, so those are part of it.
Yes. Did you not listen to those?
No, or? I did. I listened to all of it, yeah.
So, yeah, Theme for a Jackal, because it's got one... It's the same exact vocal melody as Hollywood Babylon, except it has one chord for some reason.
Yeah.
And it just gets boring. And that, oh, and also too, by the way, guess what? It's longer than most of the songs for some reason.
Yeah. Not by much, but by about a minute.
And then the song Spinal Remains. I don't know why. That song will not like enter my brain. I can never like recall how it goes.
Me neither.
And every time that it starts, I've heard that song 9 bazillion times. And every time it comes on, I always go like, oh, have I heard this song before? I don't know why. Hmm. It's really weird. Hmm. But it just won't stick with me. Like the part of my brain that loves earworms and catchy songs just keeps smacking it away. Yeah. And other than those three songs, every song on here is my favorite song.
By like the whole vibe of the band, like I think I kind of was, or the look, or you know, it's so tongue in cheek and it's so done in like a spirit of like fun and camp.
It's done knowingly.
This is not like it maybe sounds mean spirited. It's not. It's like really fun and funny and like joyous music in a lot of ways. And it's like, yeah, they're pushing buttons to push buttons to be funny and to be, you know, it's exaggerated. It's like
to get a reaction out of you.
To get a reaction out of people. Yeah. Like if you fall for fucking, getting mad at Last Caress, like you're a mark, you're a dork, like you're a fucking nerd, like get over yourself. I'm sorry.
Bullet is also pretty like how, wow.
Yeah, totally.
That's pretty messed up to sing about that.
But I would say, like if you're not a Misfits person, but maybe you're like me, you like punk rock, you like the Ramones, you like kind of the old classic punk. This is like another entry in the pantheon of like great early 70s or early punk rock from the late 70s. Like it is, it is another one. That was my biggest takeaway from listening to this, was just like, holy shit, like I missed one. Like I missed a really good one. Yeah. I can't believe I missed this.
It's true.
I can't believe I'm in my 30s and I'm listening to this for the first time. I feel like such a fucking idiot.
This is one of the main ones. Yeah.
It is, yeah. And I do, I'm not going to say I'm like a Misfits expert. I'm clearly not. But I get it now. I get what people love so much about this band. I'm really happy to be clued in. I think I said this off mic earlier, but like I think this was like a really inspired choice of yours. I'm like really glad we got to do this one.
Cool. Good. I'm glad.
It just like it. This music made me happy and nostalgic and have I had fun in a way where like, dude, I fucking, the first few times I listened to this, I turned my car stereo up all the way.
Wow. Like,
and just, I was screaming in my car, singing along to the songs in my car. I felt like a kid again. It was really wonderful. It was just like,
oh, that's cool.
It was so fun.
Yes.
Like, yeah, like I went on a date recently and I was kind of nervous to go. And I just turned this up and I sang Hybrid Moments as loud as I could, like three times. And then I felt great.
And you're ready. You're ready for anything.
It was great. I just like, I don't know. It was this album was so fun. I'm like, I can't wait to get more into them. And I can't wait to talk to you more about some of the other Misfits projects that came after this and after their initial breakup and stuff. But yeah, like I said, join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/blackmarketdub. We are also a band. All the music featured in this episode is available to stream for free on Bandcamp at blackmarketdub.bandcamp.com. Bonus episodes on Patreon, lots of video episodes on Patreon. We do all kinds of bonus stuff. We fucking, if you leave us a comment or you write us on Patreon, we do kind of a mailbag episode. Or if you leave a good comment on the YouTube video or anywhere, we'll read your comments on the bonus episode. Yeah, we also are kind of, we're probably going to start letting people maybe pick stuff or like kind of have more of a say in like what we do. There's all kinds of
voting or something.
All kinds of fun stuff over on the Patreon. So please join us over there. Join at the $5 tier and you can get all kinds of bonus playback content. Content, I hate that word.
Yeah, it's kind of
what it is, though.
It's begun to run its course.
Sucks ass to call anything that, but yeah,
it is what it is, man.
Yeah. But anyway, Brandon, great pick. And
thanks, man.
I can't wait to decide in the next 5 minutes what my pick is going to be for next time.
I'm very excited to know what it is.
I think I'm going to go with one that is going to upset everyone who chooses to listen to it.
Okay. Yeah. It's one for you, not one for them.
It is one for me.
Oh, yeah. God.
I think.
All right. Well.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, everyone. We love you. And remember, there's some kind of love and there's some kind of hate. But the thing to remember, the maggots in the iron lung won't copulate.